Is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, Road to the Cup, Power of the Brand. The Carolina Hurricanes playoff run boosts the Triangle's magnetism for both economic development and livability. We'll read the biz section first, and then we'll go into this special report about the Carolina Hurricanes. Biz, as always, is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. A tie-in to the cover story, the Hurricanes opened Lenovo Center for road games. Getting a ticket to the Lenovo Center for the Stanley Cup Final isn't easy or cheap, but the Carolina Hurricanes are looking to replicate some of the game day experience when the Canes are on the road in the final. Carolina is opening the Lenovo Center for road games with event parking priced at $10 and free parking. The road games will be shown on the main screens with concessions and Canes merchandise available. The proceeds will benefit the Carolina Hurricanes Foundation. And it doesn't say here, but just for the record, if you weren't aware, the first road game is tonight. They'll be playing to go ahead 2-1, hopefully. Startup targets women on the links. Wilmington firm sees an opportunity to freshen up the look of women's golf. A Wilmington-based startup hopes to get more women on the golf course in style. Ladies Tees is a startup set to launch this summer. Its founders grew up on the golf course in South Texas playing with their father. To Jordan Salisbury, who went on to play golf at UNC Wilmington, it was more than a sport. It was a lifestyle. She and her sister Catherine, a third-year student at the University of St. Andrews, just a short stroll from the home of golf in Scotland, would play with each other and play with their girlfriends. But there was a problem, the clothes. Jordan Salisbury said the golfers on her college team were all practicing in the same Lululemon dress. Traditional sportswear didn't match club dress codes, and the options they could find? It didn't make me feel confident or cute, she said. So last summer, Paul Salisbury, their entrepreneurial father, posed it as a question. Why don't you do something about it? He and another investor ended up funneling $75,000 into the sisters who started exploring prototypes. We wanted something that was definitely great for the heat and long days in the sun, Catherine Salisbury said. We wanted to incorporate fun little features while still acknowledging the rules and limitations that are put there by the golf course. Features like pockets for golf balls and collars for a club's dress code were put into some of the styles. The dresses are set to launch this summer at a price point between $128 and $148. For now, they'll be sold online, but the eventual goal is a brick-and-mortar retail. A lot of girls are intimidated to start playing, and that's something we really wanted to work to break down, Jordan Salisbury said. We think many women would enjoy playing golf. NC State's Poe Hall to be demolished. A troubled building at NC State University that's been closed since 2023 is scheduled to be demolished. The university plans to replace Poe Hall in a project expected to cost up to $185 million. The Environmental Protection Agency has approved the university's abatement and demolition plan for the building, according to a statement from the school. As part of that plan, the university said it will fully demolish Poe Hall and construct a new space for the College of Education based on recommendations from consultants. NC State has not outlined a full timeline for the project. Poe Hall has been closed since November 2023 when testing identified polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, environmental contaminants linked to serious health risks. Ohio firm snags Chapel Hill space. A private equity real estate firm from Ohio has entered the Triangle market with the acquisition of a mixed-use office building near UNC Chapel Hill. Woodside Health, headquartered in the Cleveland area, paid $11 million for Meadowmont Crossing in the master plan Meadowmont development in Chapel Hill per deed records. This is the company's first property in the Triangle and second in the state. And finally, key demographic. Young adults target Raleigh and Charlotte. North Carolina's largest metros remain among the best places for young professionals to start their careers. According to new data from ADP, Raleigh ranks number 5 in the nation for recent graduates in 2026, while Charlotte landed close behind at number 9. The rankings evaluated 53 U.S. metros with populations above 1 million using hiring rates, wages, and affordability. The report analyzed payroll data from more than 409,000 workers ages 20 to 29 employed at more than 20,000 companies between January 2026. Raleigh held ADP's top spot in 2025. We'll turn now to our cover stories. Road to the Cup, Hurricane Force. The Canes defeated the Montreal Canadiens 6-1 in Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Final to win the series 4-1 and advance to the Stanley Cup Final. Here's what the team's success means for the Triangle. And this article is written by Ben Tobin. As the Carolina Hurricanes skated deeper into the Stanley Cup playoffs this spring, Shan Teal's phone started lighting up. Teal, a longtime executive at Raleigh's First Citizens Bank, was sitting in the Lenovo Center on May 2nd watching the Hurricanes face the Philadelphia Flyers in the first game of the second-round matchup. That's when Hope Holding Bryant, the bank's vice chairwoman, texted him with an exciting message. People were noticing the bank's logo on the Hurricanes' helmets, a sponsorship deal that started this season. She said, "I'm getting texts from across the country of people that are saying, 'I see your name on those helmets,'" Teal said. "When the Hurricanes are in the Stanley Cup, all of those games are in front of a national televised audience. It has really helped our brand." For Teal, the message has offered a real-time glimpse into the growing reach of a franchise that has evolved from a Southern hockey experiment into one of the NHL's premier organizations. Now, as the Hurricanes prepare for their first Stanley Cup final appearance in two decades, executives and business leaders say the team's success is generating benefits that stretch well beyond the ice, filling hotels, boosting restaurant traffic, attracting corporate sponsors, and putting Raleigh in front of millions of viewers across North America. "Once you get to the finals, you get a lot of that economic impact," said Brian Fork, CEO of Hurricanes Holdings. "You get the eyes of the world showing up here. You get concerts and related events built up around the arena. You get an influx of additional travelers and inbound visitors that are here that aren't even necessarily going to the games. And then you get just a significant further galvanization of the fan base and growth of the fan base by just getting to the finals." In 2002, the team made its first Stanley Cup Finals appearance, falling to the Detroit Red Wings in five games. The team arrived back to the big stage 4 years later, led by then-captain and current coach Rod Brind'Amour, to win the championship game and dramatic seven-game series against the Edmonton Oilers. After that 2006 run, local tourism officials and sports economists estimated that the Stanley Cup playoffs generated more than $40 million in economic impact for the Triangle region. Carolina hosted 12 home games across four different series over the course of roughly 2 months. Tickets, hotel rooms, restaurants, retails, planes, car rentals, and everything else in between contributed to that total. Raleigh and the wider Wake County area looked a lot different back then. In 2006, Wake County's population was a little more than 793,000. Today, the census estimates that more than 1.25 million people live in Wake County, nearly 60% increase in 20 years. While the Hurricanes may ultimately host fewer playoff games than they did during the 2006 championship run, local business leaders say the Triangle's explosive growth over the past two decades, coupled with the national exposure generated by a Stanley Cup final appearance, could offset some of that difference. The impact of the Hurricanes' success extends beyond hotel occupancy reports and restaurant receipts. When the former Hartford Whalers franchise came from Connecticut and arrived in North Carolina in 1997, many questioned whether hockey could survive in a market dominated by Atlantic Coast Conference sports and NASCAR. Today, the Hurricanes regularly sell out the Lenovo Center and boast one of the NHL's most passionate fan bases. Tripp Tracy, who has served as the team's television analyst since 1998, said he remembers when many people doubted hockey could work in North Carolina. He went as far as sleeping on the roof of the then Raleigh Entertainment and Sports Arena during a season ticket drive in the early 2000s to help generate interest in the team. "I remember it seemed like a lot of people in the area, and I get it, had a resistance to change. Like, we don't want hockey to work here," Tracy said. When the team first came to North Carolina, the Raleigh Arena wasn't built yet, so the team played two seasons in the Greensboro Coliseum, often to crowds of a few thousand, if not hundreds. When the 2002 finals appearance and the 2006 Stanley Cup victory, as well as eight straight seasons of playoff runs since the team hired Brenda Moore as coach in 2018, the sentiment has greatly changed in the area, Tracy said. To see not just that transformation in an extremely positive way, but also to get to see what hockey means and what the Carolina Hurricanes mean in a unifying fashion to this community is the highlight of the human experience, he said. Hockey takes Triangle by storm. Beyond the Canes, hockey has become a booming business across the region with youth and adult leagues, fueling fierce demand for ice time and the rise of new sports complexes across the Triangle. Teal said one of the reasons First Citizens chose to partner with the Hurricanes this season was the team's ability to bring together people from across the region. I look at it as the homegrown team, Teal said. You've got all these allegiances with different colleges, but everybody can come together with the hometown team. Another key sponsorship deal came in 2024 when Lenovo, a global company with thousands of employees in the Triangle, acquired the naming rights to the former PNC Arena in a 10-year, $60 million deal. And today, the push to develop a billion-dollar sports and entertainment district around the area is moving toward construction, as Canes owner Tom Dundon envisions a sweeping remake of the area. Plus, the arena itself is getting much-needed upgrades and renovations designed to enhance the fan experience. For Fork, that national attention is one of the biggest long-term benefits of a deep playoff run. There will be thousands of people that have never been to North Carolina in their life that live all over the U.S., Canada, and Europe who will travel to North Carolina and to Raleigh for the first time, Fork said. Many of those visitors, he said, may return long after the final buzzer sounds. He added the impact of a finals appearance can help grow the Hurricanes fan base for years to come, much like the team's runs in 2002 and 2006. When you get to that level, so many more people become invested because they want to watch the finals and see the team from their town win, he said. The second article in our cover story series here, Arena District Upgrade. Long-stalled 80-acre site is set for a major mixed-use build-out, aligning with the Hurricanes' latest playoff surge. This article by Kaylee Thompson and Kate Tracy. Last time the Carolina Hurricanes were in the Stanley Cup Final, the 80 acres surrounding the Lenovo Center, then the RBC Center, looked very much the same as it does today. Endless parking spaces stretched across a sea of pavement. And in fact, it wasn't much different from when the Lenovo Center opened in 1999 as the entertainment and sports arena. At that point, talk of development around the arena was just that, talk. But now a major overhaul of the arena and its 80 acres is underway. I do wish that some of it was already done and we could have it all out here to capitalize on the excitement and have people in the restaurants and the hotels and the office and all that sort of community galvanizing support that goes along with an exciting and successful championship run like this in the area. But that's why we're building it, said Brian Fork, CEO of Hurricanes Holdings. Fork said construction will start later this year. What exactly Pacific Elm Properties of Dallas will build first is unclear. In May, Tom Dundon, owner of the Canes, told the Oregonian, "We're about to announce that we're going to build a big office building on that property. The office building, or perhaps a mixed-use building, could be likely," as Triangle Business Journal reported in February, that tech giant Lenovo is on the hunt for a new office space and was eyeing the new development district. Fort declined to comment on Dundon's comments on the office building, but a sketch plan review submitted in January by Gensler, the architect on the district, states it includes the construction of a new freestanding building. The scope of the overall project is coming into focus. The first phase of the district calls for 150,000 square feet of office space, more than 200,000 square feet of retail space, a 150-room hotel, more than 500 apartments, and a 4,500-seat Live Nation music venue. Eventually, the district will have 4,000 residential units, up to 3 million square feet of non-residential space, with building heights up to 40 stories, parking decks, open space, entertainment and dining areas, as well as an enhanced tailgating experience. The first filed site plans, which are in the appeal period with the City of Raleigh, are for two parking decks and two building pads. The two parking decks will have a total of 1,800 spaces. Interior changes are coming as well. The arena itself is being overhauled as well. When ESPN polled 50 National Hockey League players back in 2019, 18% said the Hurricanes had the worst visiting locker rooms, while 42% picked the Washington Capitals and 34% said the Boston Bruins. Change is coming. In May, the organization filed permits with the city of Raleigh to upgrade the locker room facilities, offices, training areas, and the team lounge. The upgrades will cost an estimated $1.971 million. It's just one of the many interior and exterior improvements happening at the arena. On the south side, the Lenovo Center is getting a restaurant and bar intended to attract guests, even on days without a game or event. The arena is also getting a 7,000-square-foot team store, triple the size of the current store. In addition to renovations to the arena club, main concourse, bathrooms, and VIP center. The organization is also adding a 6,000-square-foot beer hall near where the ticket area currently occupies. The Centennial Authority has hired Gensler and LS3P on the project. Renderings of the project feature an outdoor terrace and improvement to the arena's exterior. Meanwhile, the Hurricanes organization opened its new sports bar called the View Bar in February on the 300 level, in addition to new luxury suites. The suites feature 14 seats, 3 parking passes, and food and drinks included. The price for a suite on April 7th was $11,897. Why the arena landed in West Raleigh and not downtown is a long story that dates to 1983. Shortly after NC State University won the NCAA Men's Basketball National Championship that year, head coach Jim Valvano was convinced the Wolfpack needed a new arena of its own. NC State had benefited from the size and charm of Reynolds Coliseum since 1949, but its 12,400 seats would be dwarfed by the 21,000-seat facility planned in Chapel Hill. Valvano met with Steve Stroud, a prominent developer and supporter, and Wolfpack Club Executive Director Charlie Bryant for lunch to discuss the idea. He said, "It's time. If we're going to have a big-time basketball program at NC State, we've got to build it," Stroud once told TBJ, and he sold us. Not long after that, Mayor Avery Upchurch named Stroud the chairman of the Committee of 85 to look at options. A downtown arena would have been a key driver in energizing downtown, which at that time fell quiet after dark. And it was long before Raleigh was a serious contender for professional sports. The Charlotte Hornets began NBA play in 1988, and the Carolina Panthers joined the NFL in 1995, but the Triangle sports scene continued to be dominated by college sports. Valvano was pushed out at NC State after the 1990 season, and by the time efforts to fund a new arena gained steam later in the 1990s, the city politics had changed. Tom Fetzer upset Barlow Hurgit in the race for mayor in 1993, becoming the first Republican elected mayor of Raleigh. Fetzer ran on a conservative platform seeking to minimize spending. Fetzer and other political leaders had concerns about putting more dollars into an arena and putting it in West Raleigh where, rather than downtown, provided a less expensive option. The city got its chance when the NHL looked to expand, but rather than grabbing an expansion team, Hartford Whalers owner Peter Kermanos moved his team. At the time, Raleigh's leaders believed the arena would be an economic driver for the Blue Ridge Corridor. Instead, that area has languished until recent years, with investment now pouring into the area and much more to come. As Fork noted, the Stanley Cup run builds the fan base. That sparks interest in not only in tickets and jerseys and such, but also in getting people to consider getting an apartment in the area, stopping by for dinner, or even putting an office or a new business there. It is a huge component and opportunity for long-term growth of the fan base and popularity of the team, and then that amplifies the sports aspect of the sports and entertainment development, he said. Dane Huffman also contributed to this report. In another related article, the Hurricane success fuels Triangle's booming hockey business. It's not uncommon for beer league hockey players to socialize in the local rink's parking lot until 1 or 2 a.m. after their games. That's because games often do not start until 11 p.m. given the demand for ice time as the success of the Carolina Hurricanes, now back in the Stanley Cup final for the first time since 2006, continues to ripple across the Triangle's hockey scene. And it's fantastic to see the team perform so well. I think it's great for the hockey market. It's just great for the sport, said Michael Baxter, Executive Vice President of American Sports Entertainment Centers. Developers and rink operators have taken notice of this demand. Bluestone Real Estate Investments purchased the factory in Wake Forest for $25 million earlier this year. Polar Ice Wake Forest anchors the facility with its two rinks totaling 95,000 square feet. In 2020, developers proposed Calvert Sports Academy in Holly Springs that would include three NHL-sized rinks, but that facility has yet to be built. Michigan-based Puckmasters is carving out its own facility in Rollsville. It's under construction on a 16,000-square-foot venue that will feature an ice sheet three-quarters the size of an NHL rink and a skating treadmill for training. Polar Ice Raleigh has been in the planning process for its second ice sheet and aims to break ground this summer. It will spend between $8 million and $9 million on the expansion. Baxter said the new ice sheet will play a significant role in freeing up ice time. For right now, we do feel one extra sheet of ice will make a large amount of difference in the marketplace, he said. Polar Ice also has facilities in Cary, Garner, and Wake Forest. Baxter said hockey's popularity in the region has soared amid the Canes' rise to becoming one of the elite franchises in the NHL. You'll get a lot more interest where kids will get infused at an older level, so kids that are starting between 11 and 16 years old, where a lot of times that's not where your normal entry is, he said. Polar Ice's skate times start at 6 a.m. and run until 11 p.m. Its recreational leagues had 1,550 kids playing in the fall and 1,600 kids in the spring. It's an awesome culture and program that when people get involved in it, they're able to stay in it and stay in it for a long time, Baxter said. Here's some numbers to give you an idea of the economic impact of the Carolina Hurricanes to the Triangle. $2.66 billion, that's the Carolina Hurricanes team valuation. 20,000 is the Lenovo Center seating capacity. $2 million to $3 million is the economic impact for each sold-out playoff game. And $1 billion-plus is the Sports and Entertainment District investment value. And just for fun, here's a rundown of the highest-paid Hurricanes players. Number one is Sebastian Aho. His average annual value is $9.75 million. His contract length is 8 years. Seth Jarvis comes in at two. His average annual value is $7,900,000. He also has an 8-year contract. Andrei Svechnikov, $7,750,000 annually with another 8-year contract. Keandre Miller, $7,500,000, 8-year contract. Jacob Slavin, annual value, $6,461,250 under an 8-year contract. Nikolaj Ehlers, $8,500,000. Annual value. He has a 6-year contract, so he makes more money than some of the others, but his contract is shorter. Logan Stankoven, $6 million per year, 8-year contract. Jackson Blake, $5,117,002. He has an 8-year contract. Jesperi Kotkaniemi, $4,820,000, 8-year contract. And finally, number 10, Sean Walker, $3,600,000 with a 5-year contract. We've got time to read some of the reporter pages. We'll start with Real Estate and Development, written by Kaylee Thompson. Downtown South plans emerge. First stage includes 350 apartments across 8 buildings. Kane Realty Corp. has filed site plans with the city for the first buildings in Downtown South, the long-awaited district set to remake the southern gateway into downtown Raleigh. The North Hills developer will build 350 apartments across 8 multifamily buildings for the first stage of the multi-billion-dollar project along South Saunders Street. The site plans show 210 one-bedroom units, 133 two-bedroom units, and 7 three-bedroom units in garden-style buildings that will be 3 and 4 stories. Amenities include a clubhouse, swimming pool, and several outdoor courtyards. Unlike most Kane apartment properties, parking will be surface lots rather than a deck with 521 spaces. A Kane Realty representative said it in an email statement that the project targets housing demands in the region while supporting the ongoing growth of southern downtown Raleigh and the Dix Park area. The 350 apartments will occupy 11 acres at 400 South Saunders Street, 558 Granite Street, and 498 Carolina Pines Avenue. No construction timeline was given. though John Kane, founder of Kane Realty, told TBJ earlier this year that construction could start by the end of 2026. But given the time required for site plan review and permitting, construction appears more likely to start in early 2028. The apartments represent a small portion of Phase 1, which also calls for 535,000 square feet of office space, 60,000 square feet of retail, 1,000 multifamily units, a 3,500-seat concert venue, and a 180-room hotel. Kane previously said a soccer stadium would catalyze downtown South, though that remains uncertain. In Durham, a builder plants flag in hot corridor. Virginia-based Greenwood Homes is building Sharon Towns, 35 for-sale townhomes off Sharon Road, south of Highway 98 in southeast Durham. The home builder has built 15 units so far, with two sold and the first resident moving in this month. Listing prices start at $339,000. The 3 and 4 bedroom homes range from 1,600 to 2,500 square feet. The three-story units have a single-car garage on the first level, along with a bathroom, unfinished space, and patio. Buyers have options to add balconies, rooftop terraces, a recreation room, an office, an additional bedroom, or a loft. George Weller, division president for Greenwood Homes, anticipates the home builder will finish the community by the end of 2026. Morrisville office. Home remodeler charts growth, adding 200 jobs. Maryland-based Power Home Remodeling has opened a Morrisville office with plans to hire 200 employees over 3 years. The company relocated 32 employees and occupies 33,972 square feet at McCrimmon Parkway and Perimeter Park Drive. Chief Operating Officer Timothy Wenhold said the company chose Raleigh for its housing stock and quality of life. Power offers exterior services, including roof replacement, siding installation, and window replacement, with an average project cost around $16,000. A lot of the houses in the area are 25 years and plus, and at that point they have needs just like anything else, Wenhold said. The Morrisville location is Power's 27th office nationwide. The company expects to complete $20 million in triangle projects during its first year. Power previously established a Charlotte office in 2019, marking its first expansion into North Carolina. Highwoods plans new downtown tower. Downtown Raleigh's office building drought could soon end as Highwoods Properties has filed a sketch plan review with the city for a mixed-use building at 321 West Harger Street near Nash Square. The plan describes a development with a multi-story office building with retail and parking. Details are limited as the sketch plan is the first step in Raleigh's development process. Highwoods did not return a request for comment. In April, Triangle Business Journal reported the company is planning an office tower downtown with the apparel brand Peter Millar as the anchor tenant. The company would occupy between 90,000 and 100,000 square feet for its headquarters, real estate sources have said. No new office buildings have broken ground in Raleigh since 2023. For downtown, the last office building to open was 400H in 2023, and none have broken ground since 2021. Except for the City of Raleigh's East Civic Tower and North Carolina Education Campus. The office market continues to be plagued by double-digit vacancy rates and a surplus of available sublease space. The sketch plan covers 321 and 327 West Harger Street, totaling 0.78 acres. The parcels are zoned downtown mixed use up to 40 stories and assessed at $12.4 million. The site now serves as a parking lot. Reporter Lauren Onosorge brings us the Aviation and Finance page. RDU approves $400 million in runway work. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority approved roughly $400 million in contracts for its new runway on May 28th, 1 week after delaying the vote to better understand what Chair Tommy Hall Roberts called a major, major investment. No questions or discussion preceded the votes, which happened within 15 minutes of the meeting start. Hall Roberts and Shelley Winters voted against the contracts. Airport staff previously said delaying the contracts could add $2 million monthly in costs and risk the runway's completion timeline. The contracts awarded to Dallas-based Balfour Beatty cover the Lumley Road relocation and major earthwork for the runway project. Scrutiny focused on participation levels for small businesses, particularly minority and women-owned firms. RDU has a longstanding goal of 12% participation on major capital projects. The two contracts fall short of that benchmark, with estimated participation of 4.5% and 3.3%. During a May 14th committee workshop, board member Nina Schlossberg-Landis voiced concern about the gap. "I think I'd be uncomfortable with voting for a $50 million package that had such a small percentage allocated to small businesses," she said. The contracts were originally expected to go before the board May 21st, but were deferred to the special meeting. No presentation was given May 28th. Schlossberg-Landis shifted her stance, saying after further review, she was comfortable moving forward. Other board members pointed to the delay as a chance to reflect on broader policy. "It's a time that we can pause and have some real conversations around what this board would like to see in the future as it relates to policy," Hall Roberts said. IBM launches $5 billion AI project. IBM and its Red Hat subsidiary launched a $5 billion artificial intelligence project that underscores the importance of human engineers in the Triangle, where Red Hat is headquartered in downtown Raleigh and IBM operates a major campus in Research Triangle Park. Project Lightwell is a secure clearinghouse for companies to collaborate on vulnerabilities in open-source software. AI tools have made it easier to uncover weaknesses in widely used code, but much of the open-source software embedded in enterprise systems has no formal support structure, said Gunnar Hellickson, Vice President and General Manager of Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Lightwell allows companies to share vulnerabilities privately so fixes can be developed and released to participating companies and the open-source community. The initial rollout focuses on financial institutions, with plans to expand across industries. While the effort relies on AI, it ultimately depends on people, Hellickson said. In litigation, SAS faces retirement plan appeal. Former SAS Institute employees are asking a federal appeals court to revive a lawsuit accusing the carrier analytics firm of mismanaging its retirement plan. In a May 18th brief filed with the U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, plaintiffs, including John Stana and Randall Wagner, argue the Eastern District of North Carolina erred when it dismissed their claims in February. They're asking the court to reverse dismissal of claims alleging breaches of the duties of prudence and loyalty, plus a failure to monitor claim. They argue losses tied to fiduciary breaches constitute diminished benefits, even if participants receive what plan documents promise. "We do not comment on ongoing legal matters," SAS spokesperson Shannon Heath said in an email on May 27. And finally, in aviation and finance, First Carolina pursues IPO post-acquisition. First Carolina Bank is pursuing an IPO following its $67 million acquisition of BM Technologies, which closed in early 2025 and transformed the Raleigh-based lender into a nationwide player with a fintech platform for college financial aid payments. The bank plans to list on the New York Stock Exchange under the symbol FCBM, but has not disclosed share count or pricing. As of March 31st, First Carolina reported $3.4 billion in assets, including $2.7 billion in loans and $3 billion in deposits. BM Technologies, now a wholly owned subsidiary, contributed about $535 million in deposits at an average cost of roughly 0.02%. The platform serves more than 750 campuses across 46 states and processes about $13.5 billion annually, holding roughly a 73% share of higher education disbursement partnerships. But the filing highlights risks. The bank's 30 largest deposit relationships accounted for about $912 million, or roughly 30% of total deposits. The model depends heavily on relationships with colleges and federal aid programs. The BM Technology segment reported a loss of about $3 million in 2025, weighed down partly by fraud and transaction losses. First Carolina is now blending a traditional commercial bank with a digital payments operation that generates deposits nationwide. The Higher Education and Healthcare page is written by Zach Ezone. His top story this week, St. Augs weighs selling some land. St. Augustine's University's extensive real estate holdings in Raleigh may be central to its bankruptcy restructuring plan. Court filings show the university has about $204.48 million in total assets, with nearly all tied to real estate. The school's property buildings are valued at about $199.3 million, compared with roughly $5.18 million in personal property. Most of that value is tied to Wake County property, including the university's 100-acre main campus near downtown. The filing also lists smaller holdings in Greensboro, Rome, Georgia, and Lawrenceville, Virginia. The university filed for Chapter 11 reorganization in late April after years of financial challenges and the loss of its accreditation. At a hearing in May, university officials indicated selling land could be part of the restructuring. Sierra Rogers, St. Augustine's attorney, told the court the university was exploring some sale of real and personal property that the university does not need, adding that leadership hoped to preserve the core campus while potentially selling some of the periphery, Rogers said. The university listed total liabilities of about $73.65 million. The Internal Revenue Service is the largest creditor with a claim of about $14.4 million. Among private creditors, American Trust Company is owed about $3.3 million. Despite its real estate holdings, St. Augustine's has limited liquidity, reporting just over $425,800 in cash and cash equivalents. The court approved up to $200,000 in interim funding from Self-Help Ventures Fund to cover immediate operating expenses while the university develops its reorganization plan. In related news, Meredith stabilizes its finances. Meredith College's finances have stabilized after a difficult stretch, with S&P Global Ratings improving its outlook on the college's bonds from negative to stable in April. A surge in gift revenue helped drive the college's improvement in fiscal year 2025 and restore compliance with its debt requirements, even as tuition revenue declined. Meredith has covenants tied to bonds issued in 2016 and 2018, requiring a debt service coverage ratio of at least 1. 2 years ago, the college fell short with a ratio of 0.65. The college regained compliance in fiscal year 2025, reporting a ratio of 2.1 and posting a $2.59 million increase in unrestricted net assets from operations. Fundraising was a major factor. The college reported $6.62 million in private gifts and bequests without donor restrictions in fiscal year 2025, up from $1.07 million the prior year. Net tuition declined to about $27.7 million from roughly $29 million. S&P Global also cited stabilizing enrollment after several years of declines. The college's undergraduate enrollment has been flat in recent years, but graduate enrollment has grown. Deposits for graduate programs for summer and fall terms have increased about 70% since 2022. President Amy Sapp said the revised outlook represents validation of the college's financial position. The college is launching a strategic planning process and preparing for a capital campaign expected this fall. In the healthcare world, Duke Health advances Garner campus. Duke Health is advancing plans for a new medical campus in Garner, one of Wake County's fastest growing areas. The health system received a commercial building permit earlier this year for a roughly 59,000 square foot medical office building and has completed a pre-application conference for a 100,000 square foot building at the same site, according to town permit records. Duke owns about 23 acres at 130 Timber Drive East near Benson Road and plans to develop both buildings over the next 2 years. The campus will be built in two phases, with primary care and specialty outpatient care opening in 2027. Duke has approval for ambulatory surgery and radiation oncology services in the second phase. In February, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services issued Duke a certificate of need for a linear accelerator, equipment used in radiation therapy to treat cancer. Duke expects to begin operating the equipment by December 2027. The project could create about 600 jobs across the two buildings. Dr. Matthew Barber, president of Duke Health Integrated Practice, told town leaders in October. Duke has not ruled out adding hospital beds at the site, which would require additional state approval. Reporter Ben Tobin brings us the news from the Greater Triangle area. Developer advances Greenville Apartments. A residential project aimed at bringing more people and activity to a growing section of downtown Greenville has taken a significant step forward. Greenville-based developer Taft Family Ventures has started demolishing the former Time for Science Museum at 729 Dickinson Avenue to make way for Bright Leaf Towns, a 72-unit brownstone-style apartment community. The project represents a $15 million investment and is expected to take about 15 months to complete, according to Thomas Taft Jr., a principal with the company. Rental rates are expected to range from roughly $1,300 to $2,200 per month, staff said. The development is the latest piece of an effort to transform Dickinson Avenue from what Taft described as a decrepit, abandoned portion of downtown into a live, work, play district filled with restaurants, retail, offices, and housing. Having activation beyond sort of Wednesday through Saturday from 5 to 9 has always been a goal of ours, and to do that, you've got to bring residents down here, Taft said. We think adding 150 to 200 residents down here will lead to even more growth on the retail and hospitality side. The apartment complex will be about a half a mile west of East Carolina University, which has served as a catalyst for development around downtown Greenville. The city added more than 7,000 residents between 2020 and 2025, according to U.S. Census Bureau estimates, helping fuel demand for new housing, retail, and hospitality projects. Manufacturer cancels project. Crystal Window and Door Systems had planned to put 500 jobs in Selma. A window and door manufacturer that pledged to bring 500 jobs to one of North Carolina's fastest-growing counties is not following through with its project. New York-based Crystal Window and Door Systems, in a letter to the North Carolina Department of Commerce's Economic Investment Committee, said it will not proceed with its $96 million investment in Selma. The EIC voted May 26 to cancel the company's performance-based job development investment grant, which included incentives worth more than $4.1 million. The project was announced in May of 2024. Thomas Chen, chairman of Crystal Window and Door Systems, said in the letter that his company, quote, would welcome the opportunity to revisit potential investment in North Carolina as business conditions evolve, end quote. Chen cited unforeseen business, geopolitical, and economic factors for the decision. The project would have been in Eastfield Crossing, a 3 million square foot mixed-use development off Interstate 95. This is the second announced manufacturing project that did not come to fruition at the development. Do Good Foods had announced a 100-job, $100 million plant in 2022 before filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in 2023. Eastfield Crossing does have one prospective project. VT Foods, Inc., a British food manufacturer, announced plans in September 24 to invest $35.7 million to build a facility at the Selma development, creating 200 jobs. Chris Johnson, Johnston County's Economic Development Director, said distribution at the plant has started and production equipment is being installed. With a growth rate of 2.8% between 2024 and 2025, Johnston County was the third fastest growing county in North Carolina and the fastest growing in the Triangle region. Prologis buys land for warehouses. Prologis, a San Francisco-based logistics giant, purchased 28 acres off Highway 42 just west of Interstate 40 for $9 million, according to the Johnston County deed records filed in May. The company plans to build two industrial buildings, one 173,680 square feet and the other 103,200 square feet off Cleveland and Pierce Roads near the new Wawa store. Prologis previously received approval from the Johnston County Board of Commissioners to rezone the property. Prologis representatives did not respond to questions seeking comment about the timeline for the project. The proposed development sparked controversy. At a March meeting, the Johnston County Board of Commissioners heard from the public for more than 2 hours. Residents who spoke against the proposal expressed concerns that property values could dip, that future tenants are unknown, that quality of life would be interrupted, and that traffic would significantly increase. Some expressed fears the site could become a data center, though an attorney for Prologis previously said that would not happen. Johnston County officials emphasized that data centers are prohibited on the site as a condition of the rezoning approval. Manufacturing uses are also prohibited, with the exception of light industrial and fabrication uses. News from the world of retail and restaurants is brought to us by reporter Kate Tracy. Boutique Hotel in Raleigh makes comeback. Reservations are now open at Raleigh's newest boutique hotel nestled in the Mordecai neighborhood north of downtown. The Gables, located at 1217 Wake Forest Road, plans to host guests in its 18-room retreat starting this summer. The trio behind the hotel's resurrection are Daniel Robinson, whose local projects include the Durham Hotel, Grammy-nominated artist and North Carolina native Tift Merritt, and Sarah Yarborough of Heyday Studios and co-founder of Raleigh Denim. We wanted to create a place that feels soulful, welcoming, and deeply rooted in Raleigh, Merritt said in the release. The Gables is meant to encourage conversation, rest, creativity, and community. The Gables Hotel dates to 1928 when it served as a stop for travelers along U.S. Route 1, the historic thoroughfare from New England to Florida. After sitting vacant for more than a decade, the owners have spent significant time and energy restoring the property. In addition to guest rooms, the Gables includes gardens, sleeping porches, outdoor areas, and more. The hotel is also introducing the Alcove, a bar with indoor and outdoor seating. Gables Lodge LLC purchased the hotel for $850,000 in 2019, according to Wake County Deeds. The property went up for sale after longtime owner Charlie Griffin died in 2016. Robert Merritt Jr. is the registered agent of Gables Lodge LLC, and Daniel Robinson is the manager. Our intention is to make a sanctuary that pays tribute to Mordecai and become something I hope that is loved by the neighborhood, Merritt previously told Triangle Business Journal. The Gables is just one of many hotel projects in the works in Raleigh. The downtown Sheraton sold to new owners who plan to transform it into a Westin. The 600-room Omni Hotel is now under construction, while the Round Holiday Inn is set to become a Hotel Indigo. Ironworks adds cafe and Asheville group site. The coastal coffee wave continues to swell in Raleigh. Drift Coffee and Kitchen of Wilmington has leased 1,963 square feet at Raleigh Ironworks with plans to open in the Bow Truss building later this year. The new location will serve a full coffee shop menu in addition to breakfast and lunch. Raleigh Ironworks is Drift's fifth location in Triangle. Drift signed a lease last fall at the Holston Apartments near Dix Park. The shop also opened at Horseshoe at Hub RTP in the fall. Its other two locations are in Chapel Hill and Raleigh off Wade Avenue. Drift has six locations in Wilmington and four others elsewhere along the coast. Drift co-founder Michael Powell is a former professional surfer who spent time in Asia and Australia during competitions. He and his brother opened the first Drift more than 10 years ago in Ocean Isle Beach. Also at Ironworks, Batiwala by Chai Pani is now open. The highly anticipated restaurant is from Asheville's James Beard award-winning Chai Pani Restaurant Group. Owners Meshawan and Molly Irani are stacking the menu with kebabs, paneer, lamb burgers, and more as an ode to India's tea and kebab houses. The 4,000-square-foot restaurant will seat 80 people indoors and 30 on the patio. Trampoline Park and Cary faces eviction. An out-of-state landlord has initiated eviction proceedings against the Trampoline Park and Cary. Phillips Edison and Company of Cincinnati started the formal eviction process against Altitude Trampoline Park on May 15th, claiming the business owes $224,902 in unpaid rent. The trampoline park owes 5 months of rent at its 20,388-square-foot space at 220 Grand Heights Drive in the Harrison Point Shopping Center, according to the complaint. Its monthly rent is $44,803. Despite repeated demands, tenant has failed to pay rent as required under the lease for the premises, which constitutes a default under the lease, the complaint says. Phillips Edison and Company filed the complaint in summary ejectment in small claims court in Wake County. Altitude Trampoline Park opened in December. Former National Basketball Association player and Tarboro native Montrezl Harrell and Terrence Taylor are the franchise owners. Indian restaurant coming to Cary. Desi Chalrastha, with locations across the country, is planning to make its North Carolina debut in Cary. The restaurant is opening at 2734 NC 55 in the West Park Place Shopping Center, according to its website. Desi Chalrastha is joining a number of other restaurants at the shopping center across from Walmart Neighborhood Market, including CC's Pizza, Subway, and the Cigar Box. The menu features a number of biryani dishes, curries, and much more. The concept has 22 locations across the country, according to its website. While many are based in the southeast with a heavy cluster in Texas, there are sites in places such as Boston, Las Vegas, and Phoenix. Cary, with more than 183,000 residents, is 20% Asian, according to the Census Bureau. This week's executive voice feature is about Scott Kirkland, who's the director of golf at Northridge Country Club. During his 25-year tenure as director of golf at one of the Triangle's most prestigious country clubs, Scott Kirkland has seen quite a few changes, and one of the biggest changes at Northridge Country Club is happening right now. Members are using the club much more now than in the past and in different ways. The club, which has seen its initiation fee balloon to $90,000, has gone from a weekend club to more of a weekday club, Kirkland said. It's a different member now, he said. People are using it differently in all facets, not just golf, and their expectations are higher. Northridge now has about 1,000 members and a wait list of roughly 70 to 75, Kirkland said. It's the third most expensive club in the Triangle, right behind Old Chatham Golf Club at $100,000 and Carolina Country Club. Northridge currently sees 50,000 to 55,000 rounds of golf played per year, Kirkland said. The Triangle Business Journal asks him, how did you get into the golf industry? He said he attended Campbell University for its professional golf management program. TBJ asked, what are your specific responsibilities as director of golf at Northridge? They're wide-ranging. I oversee a staff of 25-plus to include golf professionals as well as outside services. I'm responsible for the retail operation, which generates $900,000-plus annually. I facilitate all things golf to include daily play, tournament play, as well as outside events. How do you maintain your passion for the industry? It's easy. I've always wanted to be a golf professional. I'm as passionate about it now as when I began over 35 years ago. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen in your career and specifically at Northridge? The people that came into golf post-COVID. Most of my peers will tell you we are busier today than we've ever been. Also, the way our membership assesses the club. We went from playing more rounds of golf on specific days and times to being active whenever the weather's good. What are the biggest opportunities you see in the golf industry today? I think there's still room for growth, particularly in the Triangle. Golf has never been more popular than today. It's become cool. People that would have never played 25 years ago are getting introduced and staying because of the fun and camaraderie it provides. I think where years ago it was primarily played by one member of the family, it's now played by the whole family. Northridge Country Club has captured that and expanded on it. Clubs are truly becoming the third place for people. Conversely, what are some of the biggest challenges you see facing the golf industry? The biggest challenge I see is the talent pool it takes to run clubs is shrinking. The industry needs to change to make it more attractive. Fewer young people are interested in becoming golf professionals, golf course superintendents, and club management due to the amount of time expected and also the salary component. It likely will be felt in the next 10 years. What's your biggest professional triumph? Honestly, becoming the director of golf at Northridge Country Club, it truly is my dream job. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Hopefully still the director of golf at Northridge. What do you do to relax? And he says, funny enough, I play golf. Favorite club in your bag? A putter. Mr. Kirkland is the director of golf at Northridge Country Club. He's 58 years old. He has a wife and a daughter. And his first job was assistant at Raleigh Country Club. In Nash Square, a new Raleigh tower lists condos for $4.6 million. This article by Kaylee Thompson. Raleigh's new high-end condominium tower is getting closer to becoming a reality, with units hitting the market for well over $4 million. New York developer Alchemy Property South has put condos at its 20-story One Nash Square tower development up for pre-sale. Prices range from $795,000 for a one-bedroom unit and go up to $4.6 million for a three-bedroom penthouse. The developer is nearing the end of its design process and will go out to bid for construction loans in about 2 months, according to Ken Horn, president of Alchemy Properties. The condos will have 9-foot ceilings, floor-to-ceiling windows, custom cabinets, stone countertops, and Bosch appliances. Some units will have private balconies. The 5 penthouses will have 12-foot ceilings and will be on the 18th and 19th floors. Square footage ranges from 3,589 square feet. We're taking a lot of the pedigree that we accumulated doing very high-end New York condos and bringing it down to a market that we believe is ripe for this type of product but hasn't seen this type of product on the market. Horn said, amenities include a swimming pool and terrace on the fifth floor, fitness center, yoga studio, dog run, pet spa, and residence lounge. The monthly homeowners association fee is $2,059. Horn said he anticipates starting construction in October, depending on how long it takes to get construction loan bids back. Construction starting is not dependent on pre-sales, though. Horn said the company has a list of 150 people who have submitted a form online expressing interest. Courtney James of Urban Triangle Realty is leading the sales. One Nash Square will be at 217 West Martin Street. It's the second high-rise condo tower in the Triangle. The Novus opened in 2025 in downtown Durham and has sold almost all of its 54 condos. Some of the condos have gone for $4 million or higher. In fact, the success of the condo selling at the Novus is part of the reason why Alchemy Properties South pivoted away from a luxury apartment tower. We looked at it as a rental at first, and then a combination of rental with a condo, but then we realized that there's nothing like this in Raleigh, and we actually looked at the success of the Novus. We realized that we weren't theoretically reinventing the wheel because the Novus had been successful, Horn said. We think that the Raleigh market is a bigger market. It's a vast market, and the fact that there are so many successful high-end rentals that to build a high-end condo seemed to be the next logical step, but no one's doing it. So we think it's a good risk, and we think we're developing a product that just doesn't exist, what is going to be a fairly good demand for. Another condo project going up in Durham, a Raleigh developer is building high-end condominiums with views of downtown Durham and prices starting in the high 600,000s. The Beacon Street Development Company soon will start site work on The George, a seven-story building with 34 condos. The building will be on West Gear Street across from the historic Durham Athletic Park. Listing prices range from $695,000 to $2 million. The George will have one, two, and three-bedroom floor plans ranging from 800 to 2,600 square feet. Homes will have kitchen islands, owner suites, spa-like bathrooms, floor-to-ceiling windows, laundry rooms, and partially covered balconies. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.